Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Chris Boyer, 6 years of career structural firefighting experience who came over from 13 years of living the wildland life. Smoke jumper, hotshot, Georgia smoke diver, and tillerman. Chris has done and seen a lot. His transition from one side to the other wasn't easy, but Chris was determined to not let that stop him from being the best version of himself. Assigned to Truck 54 Northern Nevada Department, I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I think you all will too. My favorite quote from Chris is this: "The fire service is so small when you start giving a shit." With that, I present Mr. Chris Boyer.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. My name is Chris Boyer. I work for a small fire department in the Northern Nevada, just south of the Reno area. I'm a tillerman on a ladder truck currently. That's where I'm permanently based, but actually I'm kind of doing a detail for 3 months out on the engine and learning engine stuff again, which is good because, skills are definitely perishable, in the fire service, and it's good to get on the engine and catch hydrants again and pull hose. And, I've been on the truck for about three years now, and, it's amazing how much these guys with pulling hose have got it down to a science. You know, when I started Academy, it was pretty much straight pull to the door and kind of figure it out. But now these guys have it just totally down to, you know, where you're putting your thumbs and how you're putting that hose on your shoulder and how you're deploying it, you know, taking what coupling you're taking to the door. And so it's been pretty cool. A lot of guys that have less years are teaching me how to pull hose, which has been good and humbling for sure. So how I got into the fire service. So, I've, like I said, 6 years in the structure world. Then prior to that, I have 13 years in the wildland arena. And so that was, you know, how I started with that and where I started. It was definitely fundamental for, creating a lot of values and things that I still prioritize even as a structure guy. And I'm sure we'll get more into that, but, how I started, you know, it's definitely not one of these things that I always wanted to do since I was a boy. You know, my dad wasn't a fireman. My neighbor wasn't a fireman. It was kind of funny. My mom would always, you know, we'd see these guys shopping at the grocery store. My mom would always say, like, hey, you know, that looks like a cool job. You should maybe think about that. And it was never really on my radar, man. I wanted to be a PE teacher.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to be a PE teacher and coach baseball. I grew up playing belt baseball and, just love the sport. Still coaching my boy right now in baseball. And so that's kind of what I wanted to do. So I went to school to be a PE teacher. I have a degree in kinesiology. I went to school on the Central Coast. And about the time I was going to graduate, ironically, the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, was in office, and, you know, California was going through some budget cuts, and ironically he was cutting a lot of PE programs. And so my future as a PE teacher actually didn't look too bright. And one of my buddies, that I used to do some climbing with down there, in college, kind of lost track of him during the summer, came back, saw him in the fall walking around campus, and he had lost a bunch of weight, man, and looked good, looked shredded. And I asked him, you know, what he'd been up to the last couple months. And he told me he was on a fire hand crew. And I'd never heard of a fire hand crew. I didn't know what it was, didn't know what they do, didn't know anything about it. And so I got some info from him. Fall turned to spring, and I was like, I need a job. I need a way to make some money. So I hit him up for some information, and he said, hey, we're actually having the hand crew's having some tryouts, man. Show up at 9 a.m. at the San Luis Obispo High School. And, go for a little run, have the hand crew tryouts. And so how it worked back then, this is 2005, is everybody that wanted to be on that hand crew, it's a 20 person hand crew, would show up 9 a.m. on a Saturday, and they'd line everybody up on the third baseline right there at the high school. And there was a mountain across from the baseball field. And they said, and the boss would step forward, and he said, hey, we got 12 spots this year on the hand crew. First 12 to the top of that mountain get the job. And pretty much it was 3, 2, 1, go. And guys are just running, man. They're going for it. And luckily I was a good enough runner to make it to the top, and get a spot. And so, That's kind of laid the foundation for me. It's basically 20 college students working hard. That area of California is a pretty brutal place to fight fire, man. It's hot. We would get in temperatures, 110 to 115 during the summer. Poison oak everywhere. You guys don't deal with that, do you?
We do have some areas with poison oak, yes, sir.
Yeah, so you would have poison oak just in pretty much all summer. Ticks, steep terrain. And so but I loved it, man. I loved the hard. To me, it was like being on a baseball team again. Here are 20 guys going for it, working together, PTing together, all trying to achieve the same purpose. And that kind of just laid the foundation for me of the fire service. It's all about hard work and camaraderie. And that's something I still put a lot of priority in today. And so I stayed with the wildland thing. After that, went up to go be on a hotshot crew up in the Tahoe area, and did that for did 10 years on a hotshot crew. Did some time as a smoke jumper in Montana, and then had a kid. Did one more hotshot season with a kid, and that was kind of it for me, man. I just, to make it financially, I needed to be gone fighting fire all summer long, and having a kid just changed that. And so I was like, I need to look towards other things, and started to be a little bit older, and the hand crew stuff, tends to be a little bit hard on your body. And so that's when I made the transition to where I'm at right now, and definitely no regrets. A lot of my best friends are still guys I fought wildland fire with, and those, that work still has a special place in my heart. But I'm definitely happy where I'm at now. And to be honest, I got into the structural world, I think, for the wrong reasons initially. I thought, all right, well, I've done the hard work, I've done the hand crew thing, I've put in a lot of sweat and tears towards fire. It's time to go just mail it in. To pay days and 4 days. And so my first 3 years in the structural world, honestly, I wasn't super engaged. I didn't have real wasn't really very motivated. And I didn't really understand what it was all about. And it kind of took going to the Georgia Smoke Diver Program. I forget where I'd heard about that, but ended going to that program, and that for me changed everything for me. There's no other program like it. You've talked about it before with your guests on the podcast, so we don't need to dive into it again, but it changed everything for me, and all for the better. And since then, we've just hit the ground running, with the H&H, with the training and everything we're trying to do here in Northern Nevada. And it just hasn't stopped. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I've had an extremely lucky career. I tell people all the time, I've worked with some of the best people in the fire service, and I have had the best leaders in the fire service that have inspired me, motivated me, and guys that I've tried to emulate my entire career. And in that way, I'm extremely lucky. So that's basically it. I could go on about my career, man. I've had a very eclectic career, a lot of variety in there. I've seen a lot of different aspects of the fire world, and this is only the beginning.
Okay. I love it. I like the intro. So I do have a couple questions.
Yeah, for sure.
And definitely correct me if I'm wrong. So you did the wildland thing, you were on a hot shot crew. I've seen, and I know like you can only take it with a grain of salt, but I've seen the movie about the Granite Mountain hot shots. Is all that they show in that movie, is that somewhat true to what you guys really do? Like the practice, the work ethic, how you guys train for that type of fire season over there?
So that movie, it's funny. So I was a hot shot when that movie or when that incident happened, right? June 30th, 2013. It's one of those days like 9/11. You'll never forget where you were. I know exactly where I was at. We had the day off. I was out barbecuing at a friend's house, and one of our buddies comes running out from inside the house. We're all in the back of it. Hey, an entire hotshot crew was just killed in Arizona. And this was kind of before social media stuff, and so we were getting a lot of information. A lot of it was inaccurate. And so I had the opportunity. So when they had the memorial, they sent one representative from every hotshot crew to go down to Prescott and go to that memorial. And at the time, I was a squad boss. We had a new superintendent that year, and he did not really want to leave the crew to go to that memorial. So he came up and asked me, "Hey, Boyer, you want to go to this?" And it was a quick hell yes, I do. So I flew into Prescott, had the opportunity to go down to that Hotshot Memorial, and that is something that you'll never forget. Joe Biden actually spoke to it. And every hotshot, there's about 100 hotshot crews throughout the country. And each one had a representative. We actually got to go inside the auditorium. And it was a very, there was not a dry eye in the crowd, man. And so since then, I've dove into that tragedy a lot. In fact, I teach a human factor study and do a presentation at our academy every year about it. And so I know a lot about that story. But what I'm getting at is I've never seen the movie. And so I've actually tried. I watched about 10 minutes of it and I had to turn it off. I just know the story. I've
Got
read
you.
multiple books about it and I know how it ends. And I think I would just have a hard time kind of seeing the Hollywood version of it. So I don't know exactly what they talked about. I've heard it's actually a decent movie. I should
Yes.
watch it.
Yes.
But I will tell you, it's very the training with it, having gone through I've been on two different hotshot crews, having gone through smoke jumper rookie training, which is a 5-week, very intensive program. Pretty much all crews throughout the country have, they start the same way. It's very, very PT, physical training based at the beginning of the year. They want to make sure they get everybody on the same page. And the reason for that is if something goes wrong, you're only as fast as your slowest guy. And so PT is super important, a lot of training. And then you kind of hit the ground running and start fighting fire. So it's definitely some of the hardest work I've ever done. But there's just something about hard work that brings people together, man. And like I said, most of my good friends are guys still, that I hotshotted with, and we maintain a tight relationship. So I'm sorry, it's a long way to
No, you're
tell you.
fine.
I've never seen the movie, but I do know of the story. And yeah, someday I'd never been down to Yarnell. I heard they do a really, really good kind of staff ride. And I actually just learned last night from a buddy. We had a Tactics on Tap last night. And I was talking to him. He just had the opportunity to go down there and walk the ground. I guess they put in a trail in Yarnell where those guys went up, where they had their lunch spot, and where they tried to get down to that ranch and eventually lost their lives. They've actually made it a state park there, which is a really cool way to kind of memorialize those guys. So,
Okay. No, you're
yeah.
fine. You're fine. 100%.
Yeah.
So my question to you, of course, definitely I can relate to you. A child changes everything, changes your whole outlook.
Yeah.
Well, it should. Some
It should.
sometimes it doesn't for people, but it should like definitely make you think like next steps. You're bringing a human being into the world. So my question to you is, your transition from wildland to structural, was it difficult for you, or was it like, okay, it's still kind of the same? Granted, I think the gear's heavier, the equipment might be a little bit more heavier, and it's, I don't know if it's more labor intensive because what wildland firefighters do, I've seen little clips on social media, YouTube, like that definitely doesn't look like it's easy work, but how was that transition from wildland to structural?
Man, I'm really glad you asked that question. It's a great question. It was 100% harder than I thought. And you mentioned the gear. So Jesse, who you've had on this podcast, Jesse Horton, he was actually in charge of our academy when I went through, and he was our PPE guy. And I've always taken a lot of pride in my fitness. I've never had an issue fitness wise, and both of my crews, smoke jumping, whatever, I've always been able to handle it. I remember putting on that gear. I'm a skinny guy. I've always been skinny, but I'm fit. I remember putting on that gear for the first time going, holy shit, how am I going to do anything in this? And then you put the gear on, and then everything you touch in the structure world is heavy, awkward, and this is before you even put your mask on, right? And go to work. And so I struggled a little bit. And I remember thinking during academy, it's like, God damn, I'm not, this is a different kind of fitness. And so since then I've transitioned a lot more to kind of strength work and doing what I can. I'd still like to gain 10, 15 pounds. I feel like it would make that job a lot easier. But physically it was a shock. And I've changed my approach to fitness to try to match the demands of the job. But then from a mental standpoint, I think that was even harder for me. So I came into the structure world 36 years old with some pretty with a good resume, right? You know, two well-respected crews, smoke jumper. And I came in, all of a sudden I'm having guys that are younger with me with less life experience telling me kind of how the mop flops. And you know, in the structure world, there's really no way, you know, unless you're one of these departments that fights a ton of fire, which we all don't fight enough fire now, unless you're at one of those departments, the only really way to gain respect from your peers is through time. And I saw a lot of these guys that, you know, they're walking around with beer bellies and out of shape, and they never put their gear on. And when we're doing training, but they have more respect than I do. And it's like, well, I haven't even seen you perform yet. And so I kind of had a problem with that. I actually still have a problem with it. We've gotten a lot better. The department members we have now, we've kind of pushed out some of the turds, and everybody's, you know, everybody seems to be on the same page a lot more than when I started. But I had a big problem with that. I was like, man, how, you know, you guys are talking down on me, and I haven't even seen you work, or seen you do anything. But you're okay. You're pretty much exempt from doing anything because you've been here longer. You know, fuck that. It's just really, it's frustrating to me, man. I don't know if I can curse or not, but I'm just
Absolutely.
that's something that is definitely, you know, I really try now. I'm one of the more like see, which is crazy, but I'm one of the more like senior guys at the firefighter level now. And it's like I try to get in there and get reps. You know, even if we have a probie, they need the more reps, but I try to get in there and get reps. Number one, because I need them. And number two, there's extreme value in those guys seeing me mess up. And I mess up all the time. You know, like I said, the pole and hose thing just recently, they need to see me not, you know, say, I don't know. Hey, show me this, show me that. Okay. So it was a tough transition. And then on top of that, wildland stuff, you just have to know wildland. This job, there is endless stuff to know. It's shocking how much. The more I know, it's kind of like starting a house project, right? You check one thing off and add two more. This job is the same way, man. I learned one thing, and all of a sudden it's like, holy shit, I haven't touched this. I haven't touched tech rescue in a while. Like, oh my God, I haven't caught a hydrant in a while. It's endless the amount of stuff we have to know at a minute's notice.
Man, that's well said. You saw how many times I was shaking my head. The part where you describe, and it's so damn true. Like, you know, we respect senior men and women of this in this profession because of the years that they have, you know, whatever rank that they are. But when you look at them physically, sometimes, and I'm not saying, you know, everybody, but sometimes you see the ones that could benefit from, hey, let's go out there and like let's do some PT. And I like how you say that, you know, as a younger, like if I was a younger fireman, I have to prove myself. But as a probie or a younger person coming into the job, I have to treat you with respect, which I'm not saying I don't, but you have to treat them with respect. But also on the flip side, I don't know how you perform. And you could perform like crap. And it's like, okay, well, your years of service don't mean shit. And that doesn't mean that, oh, I've been on 15, 20 years. Okay, that's great. You should still be putting in the reps, you know?
Yeah,
And
and there's
we have that problem in the fire service where people think, oh, I am at a certain year or I'm at this status. I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, there was just so much. It's all talk, right? It's all talk until the rubber meets the road. And I keep saying, I'm like, man, because we're due for a good wildland fire in our area. You know, it's been a couple of years since I've been there. We really haven't had a good wildland urban interface fire. We've had a history of them, but we keep saying it's coming, it's coming. And I'm going to see a lot of these guys that run their mouth and talk, and instead of in the gym, they're, you know, doing something else, said taking care of themselves. And it's only a matter of time before we see some of these guys that run their mouth, you know, they're not going to be able to handle a good hard wildland fire. And that's just, it's something, like I said, it's gotten 100% better in my 6 years. Guys are taking care of themselves. Guys are out there training. Everybody's wants to get reps now. And people are way less afraid to fail in training than I feel like they used to be when I first got there. So, but yeah, it was definitely a hard transition for me. You know, 100%. So.
And it's funny you said it because I think of it the same way. Like right now, it's July. It's been pretty toasty. And you know, I go outside and I'm like, yeah, it's hot, you know. But then, like, you go to work and then you hear gripes of, like, oh my God, it's hot outside. And it's like, yes, it's hot. We know this. If a call comes out, what are you going to do? Like, tell dispatch, hey, it's hot. We're not responding. Like, get used to it. It is what it is. But, and I don't want to come off to, like, I don't want to come off condescending, but like, I'm actually, you don't know how many times it's like, man, I really wish a structured fire were to come out right now. Middle of the afternoon, let's go. Because in my mind, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to outwork everybody I know that talks shit secretly. Like, that's my, and like I said, I'm not trying to brag, but I put in a good amount of work to acclimate myself to this heat. And it's like, let's go. Drop the
For sure.
tone. Let's get a worker who first in engines advised and they got a column. I'm like, let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah, you want to prove yourself. Absolutely. Yeah, and that's something where, the smoke driver program was so beneficial to me is I went from kind of my first 3 years of being nervous about that big call, that important call, the one that, dispatch gets over the radio and, victim's trapped and, multiple callers, that sort of deal. I used to shit my pants every time the tones dropped my first 3 years. And, they say Chief Rhodes says you will get 5 or 6 years of fire experience in this 1 week at Smoke Divers. And I came out of that with a totally different mindset. I went from being afraid of that call to now I want that call. For me, that was huge. I used to not sleep very well my night before shift. Now I sleep like a baby because I'm comfortable with my skill set. I train properly. I have the right mindset. And I want that call to happen. Obviously I don't want people getting hurt and kids trapped, but if there's something bad going down, I want to be there for it. And that's made the job so much more enjoyable for me. And it's made training, I don't care if I failed during training now because I know I'm going to be better for it and be ready for that call if and when it happens.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. What advice can you give to somebody that, and you know, the fire service, you know how firemen are, they're not gonna really like talk about their fears and anxieties, but if someone out there has an issue like what you faced, what advice would you give them to kind of get over that?
I think the biggest thing is, man, pick you. And this is something that one of my first superintendents talked about is pick a mentor, pick somebody. There's every fire department, whether how small, how big you are, has somebody that is one of those guys that walks in the room and they have the right attitude. They have the right training mindset. They have the fitness. They have the knowledge. There's somebody that you can mentor. And so find that guy and try to be just like them. Last night at Tactics on Tap, I had a guy walk up to me and he's from our department. He goes, "Hey Boyer, you're kind of one of our mentors on the crew." And I was pretty taken aback by that. I don't really think of myself as a mentor, but he says, "Yeah, guys look up to you and kind of follow what you're doing." And to me, that's one of the biggest compliments you can receive. But anybody that's struggling, you're kind of having a hard time finding your way, man, find somebody that you want to be like. And again, sorry to keep talking about the smoke diver program. I know it's new skinny jeans and it's a hot topic out there, but that was what the program did for me. All of a sudden I'm around all these type A guys that are into the job. And when I have a problem, when I have a question, I have a whole phone list from that program that I can call and hit up guys and get advice from. And so having people that you look up to and want to be like is a number one way to keep you focused on where you need to go in your career.
Love the advice. Love the
Yeah.
advice, man.
It's very weird. It's very weird for you to ask me to give people advice because I don't know. I don't feel like I've done anything special or extraordinary. I'm just a guy that, fucks up a lot and works hard. And I'm not the smartest guy in the room, strongest guy in the room, toughest guy in the room at all. So, it's strange that, you would ask me to give advice to people.
No, you're fine, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. While we're kind of on a topic, it's one of your topics you want to discuss. Physical fitness, man. I'm sure you've heard me say, I believe it's paramount. It's paramount in order to do the job comfortably in a profession that's not comfortable. You're going to be put in situations that are not comfortable, but physical fitness to me is the end all be all in the fire service. So what's your take on that?
For sure. So, the minute I got into, I told you how I first got a job on a fire hand crew, right? Third baseline, run to the top of the mountain. So from the beginning, it was like, okay, well, this is a pretty big deal. I need to have this dialed. And then when I went over to the Tahoe Hotshots in 2007, which was my first time on a crew, the superintendent at the time, or he's known throughout the nation as Cowboy. Cowboy said, the first place you are going to make your impression is in the PT circle, because guys are going to see whether you did your homework in the winter. Were you just taking bong rips and eating Cheerios all winter, or were you investing in your fitness and getting ready for fire season? And so that's something that stuck with me throughout my entire career. And it hasn't stopped in the structure world. Like I said, it's changed a lot for me, how I've approached fitness, a lot more strength stuff. I try to get in gear. I know that's another hot topic right now, is training in gear, whether to do it, whether or not. But just getting that gear on, man, it sucks every time. I always want to do it. I never, I, sorry, I always, it's never easy. There's thousand excuses going through my head, about why I shouldn't do it. But just put one leg in your turnout pants and everything goes from there, man. But I tell people, because I get a lot of questions from guys, especially at work, some guys that struggle with motivation, some guys have a hard time getting in the gym. Their fitness journey is a little bit more rocky than mine's been, for just whatever reasons, life reasons, stress reasons, people get busy. And then my number one advice to people with their fitness is get on a program. All right. Pay for a program. It doesn't mean you need to go to a physical trainer and do that stuff, but there's enough programs out there through the internet, through different apps, where if you pay for it, that's one way that's an accountability thing, right? You don't want to waste your money. And so I did the Firehouse Strength and Conditioning program for a while. Did you have Haskins on, Eric Haskins?
I did.
Yeah. So Eric Haskins has been a pretty big mentor of mine. And I've done his program. Right now I'm doing Marcos's program, the
Okay.
Hard Knocks Hitter program, a little more gear intensive. And so just get on a program. Mix it up, and that's your number one way of holding yourself accountable to your own fitness. But it's huge, especially as I get older. I'm 42 right now, so I'm no spring chicken, and so it's something that I have to constantly curtail. I have to set little goals for myself. In fact, right now I do a couple races every year. In fact, I'm 2 days away right now from doing a 100-mile bike race on Saturday. With 14,000 feet of climbing and elevation. So that's been something that's been holding me accountable. So I got that going in a couple days here. But yeah, whatever it takes, man. Stay fit. It's never easy. People are always going to be able to find excuses why you shouldn't go outside, why you shouldn't go to the gym, do whatever, but find something you enjoy. For Jesse, it's jujitsu. For other guys, it's whatever your journey looks like, just yeah, that's all I got. I'm rambling. So,
No, you're good. You're good. Because me and you, we're kind of close in age. I'm 39 before the next year, and it's one of those things. I remember back in the day, and where I'm at now, I've definitely grown. My body has. I've been able to change my body physically, but it's one of those things that fire service is a young man and women's game. Like, the older you get, it doesn't get easier. It actually gets harder. And so the way my mindset is, it's gonna be harder for me than like my other back step who's in his late 20s. So what I have to do is I have to stick to this regimen of working out, stretching, things like that to be good at the job.
100%. I've had to put a lot more stress in kind of my approach to recovery as well. I used to never really have to take days off. Now I need days off every once in a while. I wake up and I can hardly put my socks on sometimes. And I try to stretch 1 hour a week, whether it's, 1 hour at a time, or whether it's a couple 20-minute sessions just while I'm watching, Yellowstone on Netflix or whatever, just trying to get on the ground and hold stretches for a while. If you want a long career in this job, it ain't sexy, but you have to stretch. I mean, you listen to any David Goggins book, his life changed when he started stretching, and it's not sexy, it's not fun, but you have to do it. The cold plunging thing, do you cold plunge at all?
I have never done it. I've seen it, but I'm
Oh,
just
bro,
like,
bro. Oh, bro, brother, you got to get. Oh, dude, you got to get in there, man. It is a game changer.
okay.
We have cold plunge tubs at all of our stations now. Guys are getting into it. It's an instant game changer. for guys as far as how they feel, recovery, sleep, mental fortitude. I cannot say enough good things about it. I don't think it's one of these kind of weird fitness fads and trends that you see. I think there really is something to it. So, you can go get a tub at any sort of, you know, Tractor Supply store, Lowe's, Ace, whatever, you know, for $100. Get a cold plunge tub, man, and get in there. 11 minutes a week, they say. It's what Huberman says. 11 minutes a week. So that's been huge. That's been definitely something that's helped me with my recovery.
I'm gonna have to try that. You
Yeah,
mentioned it. I mean,
it's terrible. It's awful. Yeah, you're gonna hate it. You're gonna hate it.
But it's worth it.
It's worth it, man.
Next topic. I'd like to talk
Yeah.
about leadership. I'm pretty sure you have a mentor that because you definitely discussed it. Like I have mentors that I kind of pick bits and pieces to try to emulate. So, my mentors are they're vast. So my
Yep.
question to you is, what does leadership look like to you? And in this day and age, how do you think a leader should act or be?
So the number one thing with leadership, to me is leading by example. And again, this is something that was instilled in me a couple years on a crew. Especially with the Tahoe Hotshots, is we had these guys, you know, superintendent, two captains. These guys would never ask you to do anything they couldn't do yourselves. I mean, Cowboy was 50 at the time, and he would still be out there cutting fire line with us, PTing with us, doing pull-ups with us at 50 years old. And that to me was something that's like, holy shit, man, this guy is not just telling us to do stuff and saying, I've been there, done that. He's doing it with us. So leading by example is huge. You know, I'm on a crew right now, when I'm on the truck of a captain who everything he asks us to do, he can do himself, or at least he'll get in there and try it. And so leading by example is big. And I think that's something Haskins talked about when he was on your podcast is leading by example. You know, I just heard a saying by somebody, we're standing out pumping gas and it was cold. This is in the winter. And, he comes around the truck while we're pumping gas and, you know, I'm out there kind of freezing, putting the diesel in. And I was like, hey, hey Cap, what are you doing out here? And he goes, well, if you're cold, I'm cold. And I thought that was huge, man. You know, I'm not going to ask you to do something I'm not willing to do myself. The second thing is priorities. I kind of see it, you know, now. So I just recently took, the captain's test. And that's a whole nother topic we can discuss at some point. But so I kind of dived into a lot of leadership books and kind of learning a lot about it. And I feel like sometimes our priorities get a little bit skewed, right? Especially in the structure world where, you know, this is a blue collar job, man. We get dirty, our hands get dirty. Sometimes my shirt gets a little tattered. And so we had a captain the other day and I had kind of an older department shirt on. It had like some holes kind of in the waistband area and he's kind of giving me a hard time about my holes. And to me, it's like, well, why are we even talking about this, man? I got a couple holes in my shirt because this shirt's seen sweat. This shirt has seen struggle. This shirt has seen, blood probably. Like, why are we talking about a couple holes in the shirt, man? This should be something, you know, to me and just with my background in the hotshot world, like it, getting dirty, this it's, you're going to get dirty. You're going to get holes in your shirt. And so placing priority on things that matter, you know, it drives me crazy when, you know, we have our morning briefings and, you know, we're all sitting at the kitchen table having coffee and they go, hey, we have something scheduled at 9 o'clock. It seems like all the time, if there's something that gets scheduled, it's 9 o'clock. Well, to me, that's workout time, right? If we're going to talk about fitness, if we're going to talk about taking care of yourselves, then why are we scheduling this stuff at 9 o'clock? It doesn't have to happen at 9 o'clock. All right. 9 o'clock is time. It's our time. And granted, we're probably going to go on calls. Workout's going to get interrupted, but stop scheduling stuff at 9 o'clock and then telling us in the same breath that fitness and taking care of ourselves is important. So yeah, it's priorities. I heard it. I think on maybe one of your podcasts, but 3 hours every shift. If you can prioritize an hour of working out, an hour of training, an hour of like reading, a book, listening to a podcast, or watching something on YouTube. Try to do that every single shift, and you'll be amazed how much you progress in your career. And I absolutely love that. So you're nodding your head like you've heard that before. Have you heard
I have, and I
that?
feel like where this conversation is going to go is kind of going to go down a good rabbit hole, because you brought up so many true aspects, and I don't care what organization that you are a part of, I'm sure somebody listening to this has had that happen, where whether you're a company officer or a fireman or a driver, whatever the case may be, you arrive to work. It's like, all right, I'm gonna do this. We're gonna do this, this, that, and the other. And then you get a huge stop sign slap to the face of, hey, we have to be at such and such place for this. And it's like, why does it have to get scheduled at this time? And like you said, organizations, especially administration, preaches this. They tell you this, but then in return, they do the opposite. And it is very annoying. Case in point, and I'm going to bring this up because I think it'll be a good conversation. I'm sure you've heard what happened in Fort Worth, Texas.
No, keep going.
Okay. All right. So
Yeah, bring it.
Fort Worth had a structure fire a couple weeks back,
Yeah.
definitely no more than a month ago. And firefighters were on the roof. I think there were reports of victims trapped or whatever the case may be. Fort Worth firefighters were doing their job. Something happened where I think a member or two fell through the roof. Either way, they were able to get all their members out. I'm not 100% sure if there really was a victim in there or not. Case in point, though, on their social media page, they actually have pictures of personnel attending to those injured guys. They haven't. They're taking pictures of it, all that jazz. The fire chief, instead of going to visit one of the most critical firefighters at a burn center, releases a YouTube video about safety culture. I don't know
No.
how many times that man said the word safety in his 3 or 4 minute video. It was just like, bro, you can take the time to do a YouTube video, but you can't go and see that member or any of your members that were in the hospital. They work for your organization.
That's brutal.
Man, I'll tell you, I think it's Black Sticker Company and
Oh yeah,
another
Black Smoke. Those guys are
Black
great.
Smoke.
Yeah, those guys are great.
That and Conduct Unbecoming, they lit that man on fire, and rightfully so. Like, because the injured firefighter that is in the burn center, with you not coming to see him and releasing that video, to me, it's kind of like you're kind of setting the seed of you did wrong when all the man was doing his job. And it brings back the whole safety cult. Like, I understand, and I truly want to be transparent. I understand there is no fire chief that wants to have an LODD in their organization. I respect that. But there comes a time where you got to understand you can safety this, safety that, rules, regulations. You can make things black and white, but the fire ground's never black and white. Every call is different. There's going to be gray areas that you're going to have to operate of. My thing is, if you instill that, hey, this is black and white, black and white, black and white, you're going to have officers on scene making the decisions that they really shouldn't be doing. You need to give your companies that are working grace and leeway to a certain extent, of course, nothing reckless, but the whole part of the job is citizens first. And we still have chiefs that think firefighter safety is more important than the community you serve. I want to say, okay, how about you hold a meeting and you go tell your community, hey, listen, my guys are more important than your son or your daughter. Okay. So we're not going to go inside and get them if we don't deem it safe. Like, there comes a point where we are allowing these paper pushers to become administrative roles and figures.
Yep. No, 100%, man. There's a million different rabbit holes we can go down on that one. To me, what you kind of talked about a little bit there was And it's something we teach, you know, when I teach with Hortons and Hunt, I help them out with the Finest Hour residential search class. And one of our slides at the very beginning of that is defining the difference between aggressive and reckless, right? Because reckless, you start running into the chances somebody is going to get hurt, somebody is going to take an unnecessary risk, right? But we really try to push the aggressive envelope, you know, and I always kind of relate it back to I used to be a big trail runner back in the day. And if I were to go out and hit the trails, and the whole time I'm thinking, don't roll my ankle, don't roll my ankle, don't roll my ankle, what am I going to do? I'm going to roll my ankle, right? But if I just go out and I run hard and I'm not thinking about rolling my ankle, I'm looking 5 feet ahead of me all the time, I'm not going to roll my ankle, right? But the minute you just start throwing this safety word and the safety word in there, you're more likely to probably hurt yourself. And so we try to get people to that aggressive, you know, get people to be aggressive. And what that looks like is basically it's multifaceted. There's three things that you need to be aggressive and be able to do it to where you're not crossing over to that reckless threshold. And that's number one is training, right? To be aggressive, you have to dial in your training, right? You have to train in your gear. You have to train in bad environments. You have to get out there and you know, stay on top of your training as much as possible. Number two is experience. Right, do what you can to get that experience. And number three is dial in your fitness, right? So training, fitness, experience, and if you want, you can add even a fourth one in there, and that's your crew, right? You're only as strong as your crew, and knowing the capabilities of your crew. If you have a probie with you, you're probably going to have to dial it back that aggressiveness a little bit to get him on the same page and make sure you guys are achieving the objective. But I'm glad you touched on the safety thing. You know, sometimes we, you know, we teach this class, we discuss, you know, things like clean cabs. We discuss, you know, initiatives like the two out initiative, which is gaining a lot of kind of question marks right now. RIT stuff, you know, when I first started, RIT was definitely prioritized pretty high. Now RIT's kind of towards the back a little bit because we've seen the numbers from Project Mayday, just about, you know, who's making who's getting those firefighters out, right? It's not the RIT team. You know, it's less than 10% of the time it's a RIT team. So what are we doing prioritizing that with the second or third due engine, you know? So yeah, sometimes this safety stuff gets pounded down our throat, you know, and to the point where it's detrimental to our effectiveness to be able to pull citizens out of fires, which is what we're supposed to do. So but yeah, I love that, you know, the aggressiveness versus reckless. To be aggressive, dial in your training, have your get some experience, dial in your fitness, and then look at the capabilities of your crew.
Definitely, definitely. Okay,
Yep.
okay. I want to get your opinion on this. And let's say, you know, you mentioned it earlier, you're only as strongest as your weakest link, but what
Yep.
happens? And I know this happens. It's got to be going on out there. But what happens if you're the only one on your crew that actually like cares or gives a damn? Because, you know, you're gonna have those that, hey, I've been on 15 years. I don't really need to do this. But then when they arrive at the training grounds, they're either bitching or complaining about something, you know, like, oh, and whether it's my air pack or, well, I could have done this better, but I had this happen. You know, there's always an excuse. But
Yep.
what advice would you give to someone that's like they're dialed in, but their rest of the crew's not? And it comes back to the whole thing. Like, I understand there are different levels of into the job, but at some point, like, we unfortunately have people out there that aren't into it like they should be.
Yep. For sure. That's kind of a hypothetical question because I've been pretty blessed, with my current department, the guys are into the job, man. We have hired some young guys that are into it and love the job. So the majority of guys want to get out there and train. They want to be in their gear. They want to get reps. And so I've been very lucky that I have really haven't had to deal with that too much. But in my head, you know, I think about if I were in that situation, I'm the only one that wants to get out there and train, then just at that point, at some point, you just have to worry about yourself and get out there and get reps, you know. We're doing the mile ladder challenge right now. At our work, you know, we're throwing in the month of July, we have to throw how many ladders? And guys at department know what's happening, right? We have 55, 60 members of department, word spreads quick, everybody knows we're out there doing it. But we only have probably about four or five guys that are doing it this month. The whole department's not doing it, and that's okay. I'm not going to lose sleep over that. But last year we had three guys doing it, this year we have five guys doing it. And so you just try to take those, it's like eating an elephant, man, one bite at a time. You just try to take what you can and influence what you can influence, and not worry about and lose sleep over things that are out of your control. You know, we, yeah, I think we sometimes get in this endless cycle of thinking we can change people's character. And we can't change people's character. We can teach people skills to how to force a door, how to pull a line, how to throw a ladder, but changing people's character and work ethic is damn near impossible. And we have to stop thinking that we can do that. And we have to nip that in the butt by how we recruit, how we hire. And that's one way of, you know, we're just not gonna, we're not gonna make, be able to influence everybody. And so stop thinking you can. So that's my answer for that.
Okay. All right. I love it. Love it.
Yep.
This kind of ties with leadership too. So
Yeah.
with you going for the captain's process, if you are successful, which I hope you are, but if you are successful, how are you going to try to affect change with your crew once assigned? Like what ideas are you looking to bring to the table to not only help them, but yourself?
Boy, that's a really good question. Let me think about that for a sec. I also made some notes here, so I want to make sure I'm not missing anything
Awesome.
here.
No, that's good.
Yep. You know, I'm like I said, I'm only 6 years into this job, and so I think one of the best things I can do as a new company officer, if I am fortunate enough to get promoted, and the captain's test is done now, we have the scores, we have the results, and so I'm sitting in a pretty good spot to possibly get promoted. We're waiting on a new station to get built, and if everything goes okay, and then you know, I stand a good chance to possibly get promoted, which to me is crazy. It's almost scary, right? I've only been doing it 6 years, haven't been on a ton of fires. Granted, I do have a lot of fire service experience. I have a lot of experience around people and knowing how people work. I tell everybody you should have a sociology major after just 5 years of being in the fire service because you are around so many different personalities in stressful environments. You learn how people work. And so I think I have that part pretty taken care of, and understand how to motivate people. But I think the number one thing that's going to affect how I run my crew is humility. Right. I can't come in there and just start swinging meat on day one and telling people exactly how the mop flops. Right. It's going to take every member on that crew, including me, to make it a high functioning crew, and setting the standards. We had tactics on tap last night, and one of the captains, he's a captain for Sac City, in a very busy house. They're known to be a very high functioning engine company. And one of the things he said, one of his first bullet points that he tried to instill in his crew, it was dominate. And I absolutely love that, man. It was just like, we are here to be the best, right? Whether it's picking grandma up at 3 in the morning, we're going to be the best at that. Or whether it's on a well-involved fire, we are going to be the best at that, right? So just dominate. From day one, that's how you have to kind of lead your crews. We are going to be the best and do whatever it takes to do that. And then mix in some dose of humility and understanding that I don't have all the answers. And if you guys have input, then please let me know. I'm not too good to say I don't know.
That's an awesome mindset to have. And you
Yeah.
know, I've definitely talked about this before, you know, with rank and moving up, you know, some individuals feel entitled, like, well, I have these, you can't talk to me like that. It's my way or the highway, what I say
Yeah.
goes. And those are the crews that are never really on the same page. And to me, it's there's nothing better than being out in the thick of it with your crew there, watching your captain putting in the work as you that you're doing. And the biggest thing for me is watching him struggle and fail in training, because
100%.
that's like, all right, good. Like, not good, but like, to me, I look at it as, okay, he's human, he's learning, everyone has faults, nobody's perfect. You know, of course, some firemen think that they are perfect, like they can do no wrong, which is 100% false. And you know, it's very humbling to me to see like an individual fail and then go, okay, try again and get it. And then they just continue improving and getting better and getting better.
100%. Danny, are you a firefighter? What's your rank? Are
So
you?
I'm a senior firefighter.
Yeah.
And okay, so this is probably gonna be the first time I'm actually gonna say this. I'm to the point of my career now where I need to get promoted. So I have been studying here recently for the past few weeks for our engineer. They changed it. So we have firefighters, senior firefighters, which are relief drivers. And then we used to have engineers, but they now reclassified it to lieutenant. So the lieutenant still drives, that's his permanent role. But when the captain's off, the lieutenant slides over, the senior moves up to drive.
Gotcha.
So I'm going up for lieutenant, and I'm at a point where I just keep seeing too many things that are frustrating me to the point where, like, it's actually making me not, I don't want to say not love the job, but I'm getting very ticked off at work, seeing little things that are griping. And so I told myself, I said, I need to use that fuel and energy towards studying because, like, honestly, I just can't deal with certain shit that I'm seeing with people that are in that position. And then seeing officers letting those people like continue those bad habits and not saying anything about it anymore. Like, I'm to the point where I'm like, enough's enough.
For
So.
sure. So we definitely have the ability as firefighters, right, to make a difference from the bottom, right? Change sometimes happens from the bottom up, but I feel like there's kind of a ceiling to that, right? Like our influence can only go so far, where you need kind of that company level, those that badge to be able to kind of push that even further, right? We're going through huge culture changes at our department, just like anywhere else right now. Like I said, we've hired a bunch of enthusiastic, young, eager guys that want to get out of it. Or you want to get after it. And so the guys that aren't that into it are very few now. And so to keep that going, I feel like we need some of these younger guys to promote to actually change that culture even more. So I 100% understand what you're talking about. And then you find yourself as a firefighter just kind of getting frustrated, maybe saying some negative things that you're like, God damn, I shouldn't have said that. Or, I don't want to come off as negative or come off as kind of grumpy or bitching and griping, but you can only go so far with some things. You
Yes.
know, to where you need that red hat to push it even further. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Well, that's cool, man. Yeah, good. Yeah, when's your test?
It's in January.
Okay, cool. Yep,
And to
stat.
me, so it's like a three-part, I think it's a three-part process. You have a
Yeah.
written exam, a pump practical, and then there will be a fire scenario at our training grounds. And I don't know if I have to do a presentation or not. If I do, I'm not really worried about the presentation. My biggest hurdle is scoring high enough on that written exam. I hate taking written tests.
Yeah.
My brain, the way it works, I'll think like, oh, this is the answer. And then something hits and it's like, is it really? And then it just fucks it all up. So I'm studying the books very hard. And yeah, hopefully I'll see what happens. But as you mentioned earlier, like, so if the example for me is if I'm holding a New York hook in my hand, the top of that bitch is through the ceiling. Like, that's where I'm at. I am very frustrated, and it is kind of affecting when I go into work because I don't want to say things because if I do, it's probably not going to be good. Like, there's going to be some issues. And outside looking in, I don't understand. I don't expect people to understand what I'm trying to say, but if you see what I see, you'll be like, okay, no, he's got a legitimate reason. Like, I could see it. But for others, they'll be like, oh, he's just being negative. No, I'm just tired of the bullshit. It is what it is.
No, I totally understand what you're talking about, man. One of your topics here was, the testing process. And to me, that's been interesting coming over from the wildland world, coming over here to where the testing process, there's so many people are always bitching about it, and there's so many different opinions people have on it. Now going through this captain's test, it was interesting to me that how we did it. It was a good test. Our administration did an awesome job. It was fair. But to me, it's like, huh, this is a leadership position. There's maybe 10%, probably less of it that involves going to fires and doing size ups, right? Most of it is managing people. But yet there was nothing in this that talked about me really managing people, right? And assessing my people skills. And nobody went to my peers who know me better than the chiefs do and asked, hey, is Boyer a good guy? Is he a slapdick? There was none of that. There's no peer review part of it, which I think Jesse talked about. And that was such a great point that why don't you go ask these guys if I'm worth a shit? They will tell you. They will tell you. And then teaching. Can you teach? Can you get out there and instruct shit? My degree in physical education, going through and being able to teach has helped me more in this job, probably more than anything, right? Because I can get up and talk in front of people. I can get up there and teach, you know, I can put together a lesson plan. I can organize my thoughts. That is such a huge skill and underrated for that company officer role as well, you know. So I think the testing process is, it's not perfect. Like I said, these guys put on a great test, but I feel like we were missing some components to that. So,
Definitely. Oh, I'm 100% with you. Like, I
yeah.
understand there are certain things I, you know, I'm sure people, if anyone's listening, they're like, well, he's probably saying that because he struggles with written tests. I am always upfront. I am not the best test taker, but I really wish we would focus a little bit less on like material things in the book
Yeah.
and instead look at character. Go back and look at their what do you call it? Evaluations.
Yep.
Go talk to their
Yep.
peers. See
References
if
are references,
exactly.
right? Yep.
Yes. Because like, you know, we have and we have it. They're all over. We have people that get promoted that shouldn't get promoted. And the only reason why they get promoted is because they did take the test. They scored higher enough than some of these other individuals who would be better, but because they're not great test scorers. They score low, so which means they automatically get up over, you know, they have an extra leg over that individual. But I really wish that we would reevaluate. And I'm sure there's some organizations that are doing that, but I wish as a whole, like we would look more into the person instead of like what was their score? Because
Yeah,
like
for sure.
just because like if I score like a 62 doesn't mean I'm a shitbag fireman. It just
No,
means he's
right.
just not a great test taker.
So we just had a new hire testing process. You know, we need to hire some for the Fall Academy, and so we go through, and so our recruitment process is these guys have to they got to do kind of, you know, written test. They have to do an EMS assessment. They have to do the CPAT now. Do you guys, you know, are you familiar with the CPAT?
Man, I don't know what
It's,
letter we're doing, and I'm
yeah,
sure because so
it,
I'm gonna.
that's basically the physical fitness portion. It's bullshit, but it is what it is. And then they have to do an interview. And so I knew one of the guys that was going, you know, was applying for our department. I hotshotted with him for a long time. He's been in leadership positions. The guy's 6'4". He's an athlete. His dad was a fireman, so he understands the deal, but he wants to cross over from a hotshot crew to the structural world, just like a lot of these guys out west do. You know, it's a job for young men, and eventually guys want to move on and go to a little bit more stable job, like you know, we can offer in municipal departments. And so I wasn't on the interview process, wasn't involved, but I knew the guys that were. And so I said, hey man, John's going to come in, and I'm telling you guys, he's quiet. He's going to interview like shit. He's not one of these guys that's going to be able to tell you how badass he is. Look at his resume. All right. Look at who his dad was. He understands the game. And then the EMS assessment, I knew the guy who was involved in the EMS assessment. I was like, hey, how'd John do? You know, I know he doesn't have a whole lot of hands-on because all you do is an EMT and a hotshot crew is hand out Tech New for poison oak and moleskin for blisters. You know, you don't really do a whole lot. And I was like, his EMS assessment's probably not going to be best. But this guy, you get him on a fire ground, he will outwork anybody. And not to mention that wildland experience, leadership experience. But he did not do well enough in his EMS assessment in his interview to move on in the process. And so to me, it's like, God, what are we doing? This guy's an animal. Who cares if his EMS assessment was shit? Who cares if he interviewed like shit? This guy is an absolute beast. You know, he's one of those guys you can hang out with in the firehouse. He's going to show initiative. He's stronger than an ox. He's trainable. He's teachable. And so we're passing up these guys because of how the interview, you know, this process works. And to me, that's just kind of unfortunate. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm bitching about it, but I feel like there's room. So,
A blue collar job with a white collar type interview. Never
dude, and
makes
that's
sense.
exactly, yep, and
Never
that's
makes sense.
going back to the holes in the t-shirt, right? We're giving me shit about having lint on my Class B uniform while this guy sitting next to me out of shape, nobody gives a shit about him or is going to mention anything
Fucking
about him. So,
priorities, man.
priorities, priorities.
I'm
So,
telling you. I'm telling you. It's everywhere. And I love hearing you talk about it because it's like, all right, it just reaffirms to myself, I can't be the only one that sees this shit, but it continued to go on, you know, departments day in and day out pass up on what would be strong body workers because they didn't meet this or they meet that, or HR is too much involved into the hiring process, and it's like we don't sit in fucking cubicles. That is not our job. Our job, life and death, sweat, grit, blood, tears, like it's hard work. And we, if we can get rid of that white collar mentality and start looking at the individual, I think it would go a long way. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. We always kind of half joke about, changing the interview process and setting up something where these guys walk into a kitchen, and the coffee pot's half empty, and there's guys at the kitchen table kind of talking about a certain thing. Can they come in, show initiative to refill the coffee pot? Maybe do the dishes that are dirty in the sink. And then can they socialize and come into a conversation without it being too awkward? Right. And then you're going to go outside and I want you to run a 40-yard dash and I want you to field a ground ball and throw it back to the pitcher or whatever. That would be, we joke about that, but we can learn more about a person from that sort of interview process than we can from an EMS assessment, from an interview, because guys will tell you anything from an interview. They will bullshit you all day long. But
Absolutely.
when the rubber meets the road, can you get along with, can you socialize with guys without being awkward or creepy? Right. Do you have a team sport background? Because there's a big discrepancy I see with guys that do not have a team sport background and guys that do have a team sport background about their aptitude in the firehouse to be able to get along with people and to be able to do the job.
Awesome, man. I love the conversation. Awesome. Awesome shit.
Were you a team sport guy, Danny?
Back in the day, I played basketball, I don't know, in my I guess in my junior years, and then I got into high school. I then switched gears and I did track and then I did tennis. So
Tennis, man. Nobody plays tennis anymore.
I dude, so it's a lot. Well, I mean, you got this thing called fucking pickleball now that's like, and I'm sorry if any of my listeners play pickleball. I mean, I'm not saying like, I mean, that's great because you're active, you're out there. But tennis is more like the way you have to run after the ball, whereas pickleball, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like,
So
no.
funny.
I
They're
mean, yeah.
converting all of our tennis courts where I live to pickleball courts,
Oh,
man. And
I'm sorry.
they are parking lots are packed, man. It's just blue hairs out there on a Saturday morning,
It's
getting some on
crazy.
the pickleball courts. So hey, kudos to them. They're doing something, being
I mean,
active.
yeah. They're doing something and being active, but it's like, come on now. Like tennis is the real deal. Like, because I remember when I started, I had, some of my friends were like, tennis, like, man, like, what is that? And I'm like, have you ever played tennis? You ever play tennis with somebody that's really good? Like, they're gonna challenge you. I remember when I started, man, the next day or two, I was sore as shit. And I'm like, wow. And then ever since then, like, my dad got involved, and he's what, my dad's in his 60s and he's like part of a tennis club. I mean, the dude is like, I've kind of shied away from it, but we went and played a while back. But like, my dad's upgraded his tennis game. He's got the machine that sends the ball to you. I'm like, fuck, dad, where'd you get that? He's like, bro, I got it on a steal. And I'm like, you carry that around? He'll put that bitch in his trunk, go when nobody else is playing, and he's hitting the ball with that thing, shooting the balls back at him. I'm like, dad, like, damn it, man.
That's
That's
so rad. That's
crazy.
awesome. I still don't understand how you score tennis, all the love talk, and
Oh
I
yeah,
still don't get
no,
that,
it's
but
easy. It's easy.
yeah.
But
Good for you, man.
that's like if somebody tries to explain pickleball to me, I'm looking at this shit like, what is this? Like, so it's, yeah. But I will agree with you. Team sports, team camaraderie. And I'm pretty sure with you being in Wildland, having that around you, when you transition to the structural side, it's like, oh, okay, like it's the same here. Different personalities, but I've talked to a lot of guests that were either in the army or one of the armed forces, and they were just looking for that team building, bonding, lift you up type stuff. And that's what the
100
fire service is.
100%, man. I tried to make it as long as I could in baseball. Eventually got cut from my college team. I was kind of looking for that camaraderie, there's a really good book out there called Tribe by Sebastian Younger.
Yes.
And yeah, have you read
I have so I'm not like when I read
it?
books, it like starts it puts me to sleep, but then yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it
You
is.
gotta read in the morning, man. That's what I start to do. Read, because yeah, I'll do the same thing. Read one page and fall asleep with a book on my face. But that book, yeah, go ahead.
My battalion chief put me on that, and
Yeah.
I listened to the audio version.
And so it's awesome. He nails it on the head, because what the fire service has, why it's so attractive, is you're part of something bigger than yourself, right? You're part of a tribe. And since the beginning of humanity, civilizations worked around tribes. Like, you contributed to something within that tribe, whether it was gathering berries, hunting for food, starting the fires, and that's pretty much what the fire service is. When you go to work, you're part of something greater. You are there to make your department, your crew, your city better. And I think that's where that feeling of belonging, really is attractive to people, and that's kind of what it, that's the void it filled for me. All of a sudden I couldn't make it as a baseball player. So I'm kind of walking around aimlessly, man. I don't have a tribe. Sure, I have my friends, but all of a sudden getting on that hand crew, between, college semesters, like, holy shit, man, I'm back with a tribe. I'm doing something. I'm feeling like I'm contributing to the greater cause. And, that's something I don't think we talk about enough. And, that's one of the attractive things with our job, man. We're in a tribe. It's tribalism. It's real.
Definitely, definitely.
Yep.
And what's kind of sad to me is, with I don't want to say generation, but as time, meaning as the years progress, like 2024, 25, 26, 27, or at least for me, I'm kind of seeing that lost art of the
Yep.
tribe within the
Yep.
firehouse, where at the kitchen table, man, instead of talking, people are eating but scrolling. With their phones, and I'm like, nobody fucking talks. And then so in my head, I'm like, is this how you guys do with your own families? Everybody's on a gadget instead of talking. And so,
Yep.
like, that lost art, man, like, it becomes like, well, shit, if this is how it is, then I'm just gonna go eat by myself. I mean, because nobody's talking, people are watching stuff on YouTube, anime, whatever, and it's sports, and it's like, this is the one time we have where we can kind of like quickly just sit there, maybe talk about a call, talk about what we can improve on, family life, passions. But some organizations, some crews, it's gone. It's lost.
Yeah, for sure. I don't have an answer to battle the iPhone virus, man. I mean, it's real. It's out there. I do. There's a guy that works on B shift, Bryson. He basically will have everybody put their hats in the middle, or their phones in the middle of the table in a hat, and like during dinner, like that's the family time and people aren't on their phones, because it's inevitably somebody just starts scrolling. And I mean, it's a huge accomplishment. You make it through a movie, with guys out looking on their phones, man. It's hard.
Right.
It's just one of these things. I'm just as guilty as anybody else. But that's again why training's important, why group PTs are important, because you really don't have the ability to get on your phone during those things, and it creates that bond that we all love and cherish. So
Okay. With you, as I stated earlier, with you going up or making the list of captain, in
yeah.
your opinion, how important is communication? And I mean, from not just from the firemen, but from the whole organization, top down, down up. How? Because it's my opinion that I've seen that successful organizations, successful crews, communication is paramount. Everybody's on the same page. Nobody goes, well, I didn't know this or I didn't know that. Granted, there are stuff that are purviewed,
Yeah.
certain rights. You can't talk about everything, but how important is communication in your opinion?
So, I mean, as a company officer, if I am fortunate enough to get promoted, I feel like I need to be the filter for the crew, because there's going to be things that come down the pipeline that, maybe isn't even worth mentioning to the guys, or sometimes you need to kind of warn them and be like, hey, this is coming down the pipeline. Here's how we're going to handle this. But you have to be able to disseminate that information in ways that kind of keeps the crew moving in a forward direction. So that's definitely going to be a challenge. And for me, the communication part of it is going to be, I like the guys. One of the reasons I love the fire service is the guys. And I've always been one of those people that, I share a lot with people. I'm an open book. I like the personalities, but for me, all of a sudden it's gonna be a challenge for me to kind of go from that buddy to boss transition. And that was always a struggle for me in the wildland side, when I started getting leadership roles, is like trying to create that barrier a little bit. You have to, right? The buddy to boss thing. And so that's gonna be a challenge for me. I kind of have a year from when, you know, from now until possibly a promotion, and I need to kind of dive into that and think about how I'm gonna transition to that. It's not gonna be easy, but the communication part of it, man, is huge, and being able to kind of filter the negativity and keep your guys's the priorities in line.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Last topic of
Yeah.
health and wellness, truly being there for one another. What's your take on that?
Oh man, so the health and wellness part. So this could be a long-winded topic because this is something that's near and dear to my heart. So 2013 was a bad year in the wildland world. We had Granite Mountain, where we lost 19 hot shots. And then one of my best friends at the end of that year, we were at a crew party, and long story short, basically he was killed in a vehicle accident. And I'm not going to go into details of how that happened, but I lost one of my best friends. And that was at the end of the year, crew party. So all of a sudden I go around, this tribalism being around 20 guys, to all of a sudden I'm laid off in the wintertime because wildland guys get laid off. So I go from full bro overload to all of a sudden I have nobody to talk to, and I'm by myself just thinking about Mike and thinking about this loss. And I didn't really know how to handle it. And started doing the drinking thing too much. I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't eating, I wasn't working out like I usually do. So we had a CISM team come in. At the time, I'd never heard of anything related to CISM. They came in, it was a bunch of old retired hotshots, and they talked about some of their experiences that they've gone through. They talked about how to cope with some of these feelings you're gonna have, these emotions that you're gonna experience. And it helped me instrumentally get through kind of that tough winter. And honestly, I still think about Mike every single day. It's over 10 years now that this happened. And so when I came over to the structure world, I got involved in CISM teams with the wildland stuff, and would go out sometimes when these things, guys were hurt on fires and stuff, and I'd go facilitate some of these CISM meetings and CISM debriefings. When I got over to the structure world, I was very, very surprised how little we had in place. And so with my background in that, I created a peer support team. And it has been nothing but positive. When I first created it, I got nothing but shit about it. I was a newer guy, but we stayed with it. And now we have about 12 members of this, 12 department members part of this peer support team. And it's a very active program. I tell people all the time, it is the busiest program at our fire department. I have guys coming up to me all the time, like, "Hey, A shift went on a tough call. You may want to reach out to this." It almost governs itself now. I have to do very little with it as far as reaching into people. Guys are watching out for each other better than they ever have been. We have a lot of good resources out here in Northern Nevada. Kudos to our neighboring departments. Pretty much every department around here has a peer support team. And we have vetted therapists throughout the area. I'm constantly getting asked by department members, who can I go see? And other departments will call me, like, "Hey, do you have a therapist close by?" And I can point these people in the right direction. And so health and wellness, as far as that is, like I said, it's near and dear to my heart. I think my perspective on it has changed a little bit. And so first got here, you hear PTSD, "Oh my God, we run such terrible calls." And so in my experience, my 6 years of experience here, what I see affecting guys more is their decision in their on their 4-day, right? Guys are making poor decisions in their personal lives that are affecting their mentality at work and the ability to do the job. And so I go into the academies every year and I talk about taking care of yourselves in your 4 days, right? Not planning too much on your first day off, having a way that you can have an outlet, whether it's fishing, getting on a bicycle, doing whatever, it's something that clears your head. On making good decisions in your 4 days so you can come to work prepared, right? Maintaining those relationships, friends outside of work, right, is super key. And then something we see a lot too is organizational stress getting the best of people, administrative decisions, stuff that you talked about, things coming from above that you don't agree with. That's almost worse and more detrimental to your mindset than the calls itself, right? Would you agree with that? And so that's something I feel like we don't talk about enough. Chief Rhodes is big on that. Or he's like, "The biggest challenges you will face are those from within your own department."
Absolutely.
So Like I said, this is a big topic to me, super important, but I am so proud of what we're doing here in Northern Nevada with mental health and so proud of our department members. And my administration has been extremely supportive of anything I want and need to help create our peer support team and make sure that guys are have long retirements. So,
Man, well said for
yeah.
sure. It's one of those things that, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with everything. It shouldn't be like that, but it's like you have more internal struggles within your own organization than people like you don't even know. You know what I mean? Like, and it's sad that it's like that, but that's just the way it is. And you got to learn to control what you can control. I've heard that, and that's the best advice. That and what gets me to reset, definitely find something, have an outlet, have an activity, find something other than that's fire service related, because this job is great now, but when you retire, what do you got? Nothing. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah, the work-life balance stuff is definitely a hot topic right now, but you want to make sure that the day you walk out of the firehouse, you're going to get replaced immediately, and you don't want to turn around to your family and all of a sudden nobody's
No
there,
one's there. Yep,
So, and
definitely.
that definitely that's something I'm trying to figure out. And the more I've the last couple of years, getting into the job and doing stuff, and I'm a yes guy, right? Like I get asked to do stuff at work, and yes. And I just have to be careful to kind of find that line and remember my priorities. So,
Definitely.
I,
Okay.
yeah.
Last, it's not really a question, but well, it kind of is a question, but anyways, it's not official. But I always kind of like to ask the guests. I know you're on the captain's list, but where do you see yourself ending your career in the future? Like what rank do you see yourself going out, or what would you like to achieve?
Well, listen to all these podcasts, right? People ask you, what's the best rank? What's your favorite role, man? Everybody always says company officer, right? But I don't like to look too far in advance because I don't know how my mind's going to be. I don't know what's going to happen in my personal life. I don't know how my body's going to hold up. And so for me right now, 42 years old, I still feel good. I love doing basic fireman shit. I just love it. And so I'm okay. If I'm going to retire as a fireman, right? Some of my biggest mentors in this job, Brian Olson, Eric Haskins, those guys are still firefighters, right? But they're making a huge impact on the fire service. And so I don't really want to talk about like these career lifelong goals because there's so many different variables that could occur. So if I retire as a fireman and I'm happy doing backseat, my body's holding up, then so be it. It's the best job in the world, and you can still make an impact from that informal leadership role as a backstep firefighter. So,
Awesome. Awesome. Chris, man, I really, well, first of all, I have to give a shout out to Jesse. Jesse, I appreciate you hooking me up with Chris. Chris, this has been an awesome conversation. I loved hearing your story. I love hearing everybody's story because they're all unique, but I love hearing your story and how you went from one part of the fire service to another, because to me there's a respect on both sides, because I've seen, the West, the out West fires in California, Nevada, places like that. And you see, I don't know what these guys are going through, but like the work that you have to do to contain these things, like it's surreal. So I just want to say thank you for that. Now that you're on the structural side, thank you for continuing that path of what you're doing. You're kind of laying the foundation for others to kind of follow and emulate. You're laying down those bricks, to the Golden Brick Road. And I just want to say, man, thanks for accepting my call, accepting the invite, and coming on and talking shop, man. It's been great.
Absolutely, man. Love being on it. And these podcasts for me, they're not easy because it's kind of like interviews. I don't really like talking about myself, and I'm still surprised that you would take time out of your way to hear my story. But I really appreciate what you're doing, and it's such a neat time that we're in the fire service, right? Like I can talk to a guy back east right now and find out that you do this, have the same mentality, the same mindset, the same thoughts. You put the same priorities in your career that I am doing in a completely different part of the country. So pretty darn cool, man. It's just telling somebody last night at Tactics, man, the fire service gets small once you start giving a shit. Right. Like you're just another one now that I can reach out to if I need something. And that has been one thing coming over to the structure world. Guys are so freaking helpful, man, no matter who you are. I mean, I just had a question for Brian Olson two days ago about something. Right away, he texted me back. Yesterday, I'm on the phone with Chief Anthony Castros from Sac Metro, asking him if he wants to come out to Tacos on Tap, and he was nothing but cool to me. And so the fire service has gotten so small once you start giving a shit, and it's been super rewarding. And I'm glad to be a part of this kind of movement and culture change we have going on. And I just got to keep the pedal to the metal, man. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, man. And like I said, I don't think Jesse would give me excuse the language like a shit bag. And he so I, if Jesse said, "Hey, man, I got a guy for you," I'm like, "All right, Jesse knows the type of people I like to talk to." So he was like, "I got a guy. Here's his number." I was like, "All right." So Jesse, if you're listening, man, seriously, thank you very much. This was awesome.
Yep, Jesse's the man. He's definitely one of my mentors. So,
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I
thank.
appreciate it, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, you have a good rest of your day, Danny.
Hi, man, you too.
All right, talk. Take care. Bye.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.